Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. In the 1980s, the tabloids and the talk shows from National Enquirer to Oprah were talking about everyone's biggest fear, that small children were being kidnapped by witches and sacrificed to the devil. And a new psychiatric method known as recovered memory theory was in vogue, and countless adults who suffered trauma as a child were somehow recalling bizarre satanic rituals dating back to their earliest memories. And in courtrooms across America, daycare workers, teachers, social workers, many people were accused of heinous crimes, leading to arrests, trials, and prison sentences based on dubious testimony. Who would have thought all this harkened back to a young woman named Michelle and her psychiatrist in peaceful Victoria, British Columbia? Satan Wants You is a new documentary that delves into the case of Michelle Smith, her psychiatrist Lawrence Pazder, the best-selling book Michelle Remembers, and the ramifications it led to. This compelling film tears the veil from the story using period TV footage and new interviews with all the family members and people involved. Satan Wants You is written and directed by Vancouver-based documentarians Steve J. Adams and Sean Horler. Steve and Sean are a prize-winning team known for their films on pop culture and queer topics, and whose doc, Someone Like Me, won the Audience Choice Award at Hot Docs in 2021. Satan Wants You played at this year's Hot Docs Film Festival and is being released theatrically soon. And I'm very pleased to have Steve J. Adams and Sean Horler here with me in person to tell us more about Satan Wants You. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. So, you two are from, you're based in Vancouver, and you're from Victoria originally? You're from Victoria originally.
Yeah.
When you're growing up, did this story, was it in the back of your mind somewhere? Had you heard of it?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in Victoria, the Pazders, so Michelle and Larry, they were everywhere. So they're in the newspapers, they're on the radio, they're on television, and it wasn't just right when the book was published in 1980. This went on for over a decade, right, that they were selling the book, promoting it, doing speaking tours, consulting on cases in Canada and the U.S. It's been 30 years since then. So my family moved to Victoria when I was a kid, right after the book was published. But you forget all of this, right? Until the book came back into her life. And then I was shocked to see how many millions of people this book has touched.
Mm-hmm. And how about in Northern BC? Did it have a whisper, an inkling in the back of your mind up there?
For myself personally, no. I asked my mom, I was like, did you know that the satanic panic happened? Or, like, did you, like, were you scared that we were going to get, like, kidnapped when we were kids? And my mom said she didn't really see it a whole lot up there. So it seemed to be, like, in bigger centers where you definitely would hear more about it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, in Victoria, we were looking out for the people in black and, you know, they're going to steal us. And then there's stores in town, really, that, you know, everyone had rumors that they had altars set up and they would sacrifice animals. And, like, it's just insane.
No. When I was in the 80s, I met a woman from Victoria, and she said, I said, oh, Victor, that's a nice, peaceful day. She says, you haven't heard about the witches and the Satan? I go, what? She says, well, that's what everyone talks about. I don't know if it's true or not, but that's what everyone says.
And I have to, if you haven't been to Victoria, it's not that kind of town. I have to tell you this.
So let's start with Michelle Smith. Who was she? Where did she come from? And where did these stories come from?
Michelle Smith was born and raised in Victoria. Mm-hmm. She had gone to, multiple schools throughout Victoria. We could find her a whole past. She, in 1976, had a miscarriage, and she suffered, some trauma from it, and she needed to get into therapy. She had already previously seen Lawrence Pazder, But after the miscarriage and after this really bad dream that she had, she needed to start to talk to him again.
And he suspected that there's something, you know, the dream was a sign of something much darker and deeper that they need to explore in therapy. And then what happens is, you know, they start having a session a week, and that turns into a session every day, and then it turns into 8 hours of therapy every day of the week.
8 hours of therapy?
Yeah.
So he was like, she was like his main patient.
For 2 years. 2 entire years.
How, was she very rich? Like, who paid for 8 hours of psychotherapy every day for 2 years?
The tax, you know, MSP. So
okay. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is something that, you know, the folks who will see this movie, this is something that we address in the movie, because there is this sort of therapy business component to this period of time, right? This, especially in the U.S., these therapists were making millions and millions of dollars off this, right? Recovering memories and spending 8 hours a day. It wasn't just Michelle and Larry. This happened everywhere after the book was published.
So, like I said, it was sort of in vogue at the time. What is recovered memory?
Recovered memories are usually, if somebody has suffered trauma, they will forget the memories, or they'll be stuffed into the back of their mind. And then through this therapy that happens over multiple sessions, very deep, very long, they were being hypnotized as well. And that's where you begin to find some of the memories that begin to come back.
And, you know, you're an adult and you do not remember this, just to be clear. These are memories that you don't even know that you have that suddenly appear in the course of therapy. And then it's all the worst, the very worst things possible. Satanic cults, like ritual abuse of children, sacrificing animals, all of this stuff comes out in therapy.
Okay, so, and they're taping the whole thing on reel-to-reel tape. Now, in your documentary, you play some of those recordings. How did you get your hands on them?
In the book, there's acknowledgments to everybody that participated in doing the transcribing, and people who just had access to the tape. So we had gone through and tried to contact everybody, and we told them, if you guys have one of these tapes, we would love to get our hands on it. You can send it in anonymously if you like. And towards the end of editing, we were almost at picture lock. We got one of the tapes, and we had to rework the whole movie and get those tapes brought into it.
And we should tell you, too, this, you know, all the promotion around the book originally is that the book is the therapy sessions, right? Like, they literally took chunks of the tapes and put it in the book. And you hear that, and you're like, well, you know, it's written. It looks like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's when we got that tape, we could search a PDF of Michelle Remembers, and it was verbatim. What was in, which was, you know, like you hear the rumor, but it was actually turned out to be true. And it's shocking to actually hear what you've read in a therapy context. And it's, no one has ever heard these.
And you did speak to the secretary or the woman who did the actual transcription of the audio tapes that were used in the book.
Right? Yeah. Her name's Chidi. She was actually Larry's literary assistant. So she was integral to the book process. And she was also one of the transcribers, because he had several.
Mm-hmm.
But after talking to their immediate family, like her sister, Michelle's sister, and the children of the doctor, what did you start to find out?
I think there was a story that existed between Michelle and Larry that people really didn't know. The family members had never spoken about this. Nobody had given them the opportunity to speak. And so actually finding out what was happening within their relationship and what was happening, the effects on the family, is like what we really began to find. And it was really interesting as we began to cover that.
And I mean, honestly, there's a section of the film that deals with this, and it is just the tip of the iceberg, because, you know, it's a 90-minute film and you can't put everything in. But
yeah, no spoilers, but right. you began to doubt the veracity of her story.
Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, the you know, when they did their press tour originally in 1980, that was the story. You never heard this other side. So this film is actually breaking new ground in that respect, because now you're hearing what happened with everyone around them, and you actually get the whole picture. And we've done some screenings, right? We premiered at South by Southwest in the U.S., had sold-out screenings there, sold-out screenings in Salem. Hot Docs was packed, and some people...
Salem! Like Salem Village,
yes.
Witch Hunt. Okay.
It was very popular there, I have to tell you. But some of the audience, you know, it's ruffled some feathers how we've actually looked at, you know, Michelle is no doubt a victim, but this other complicated relationship that of her participating in what happened for 10 years really disturbs people.
Well, speaking of Salem, Satanic Panic, as they call it, it's been variously described as mass hysteria or moral panic or things like that for its almost comical grip on the public imagination in the 80s and early 90s, but it had very grave consequences. And in your film, you follow another case of supposed satanic rituals in L.A. known as the McMartin Preschool Trial. Mm-hmm. What was that one about?
It's kind of the classic daycare case. It's the one that really started, I think, the all the rest of the daycare cases. But it was a family-owned daycare center.
In Manhattan Beach, California.
Yeah, and it had, somebody was a woman had accused the daycare takers, or the daycare people, that they were abusing their children. And it started a mass panic in, what's it called? Manhattan Beach, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was like 1,200 kids is, I think, eventually what it grew into. And it was this trial that lasted like for over a decade. And it was the most expensive criminal trial in U.S. history until O.J. Simpson. Like, this was such a big deal. And then all the people who participated in that trial would go to other cities to advise on satanic ritual abuse cases. So it spread the panic. Like, the book spread the panic, McMartin spread the panic, and then the daytime talk shows really spread it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was a period, there was another thing going on at the same time where lots of school teachers, especially, were being, especially if they're gay or lesbian, they were being accused of grooming or molesting the kids or turning them gay. Mm-hmm. This is a separate thing, but do you see some sort of connection between the two crazy things going on at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, queer people and single women were the target of these satanic ritual abuse rumors, and many of them went on trial. Like, it was queer teachers or several large daycare cases involving satanic ritual abuse that were targeting just the queer teachers in the U.S., and it's like, it's so frustrating, because, like, Steve and I are both queer men. This is, like, this could be us, or it could be our friends who are receiving this from a rumor, right? And now we're seeing it again in the U.S. with the drag queens being targeted and transgender community being targeted, grooming. It's the same thing again and again and again.
Yeah, and, like, one of the things that I found really powerful was just, like, when you're accused of abusing children, it never leaves you, right? Like, Kelly Michaels, who we have in the feature, or in the film, she went to prison for 5 years, and afterwards her life was just ruined. And Debbie Nathan, who's the investigative journalist in the film, still communicates with Kelly Michael, and she just said, like, her life just never recovered after the accusations, and it's really sad to see.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, there's a component to the satanic panic that does make you laugh, because it is just ridiculous, right? It's so stupid. But I remember saying this, my producer Melissa and I were talking to Debbie Nathan off camera, and, you know, we were going through her archive and looking at all of this material that she had found in these drawings that are just ludicrous of what a satanic ceremony would look like. And we were chuckling. And Debbie Nathan just, you know, put her hands on the table and said, listen, your generation thinks this is a big joke. It's not at all. It's dead serious what happened to these people. Which is true, and I'm so glad she said that. Because, you know, you can laugh at parts of our
movie. The title is Satan Wants You. That's intentionally humorous. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
But there is a serious underpinning to it, too. Mm-hmm. So
there's one other factor that plays an important role in the story, which I knew nothing about till I saw it. But apparently, it involved the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And this was decades before the terrible scandals of priests molesting children came out, but this was about the Catholic Church promoting this idea of Satanism. Can you talk about that?
Charles Ennis has a really interesting take on what's happening with the church and the church's involvement. It really was about getting people in the pews. If you have people in the church, they're going to be giving you money. They're going to be creating money, power, influence. And the church's involvement within the book was almost like marketing for them.
And the priests were involved right from the beginning of the writing of the book. The priests in Victoria are the characters, along with the Bishop of Victoria. And, you know, let's be honest here, they took them, Michelle and Larry, straight to Rome to see the Pope. So this was top to bottom, church involvement, and they saw value in this book and this story.
Yeah, and in the like the first few pages of the book, like they have an acknowledgement from Remy DeRue, who's a bishop, and he's endorsing what's in the book. Like, it's crazy.
Which is why people believe it, right? Because all these authority figures that you know and trust say, this is real, this is happening.
And how would you tie this, finally, into the present day? I mean, with the internet and social networking, things spread very quickly, but they can also be debunked just as quickly. Do you think it has relevance today?
Yeah, I mean, we started really seriously looking into this film in 2018, and this was right after Pizzagate, you know, so pizzeria in Washington, D.C., where people are abducting children, sacrificing women, drinking their blood in the basement. It's ridiculous, but a gunman showed up and tried to shoot people searching for the kids, right? Like this, and then followed by QAnon, which is the same rumors as 40 years ago, just repackaged and targeting different people. So it's like cyclical. This story just keeps happening again and again and again.
Fascinating movie. Steve and Sean, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having us.
I've been speaking with Steve J. Adams and Sean Horler about their new documentary, Satan Wants You, opening soon across Canada. This is Daniel Garber the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.